Legal 112, this is your podcast for week number two. I can't believe I forgot which week it was already, but it's really seemed like it's been a long week. So, in any event, this is your podcast for week number two, and we're going to continue our ride into legal research. This week, we have a few different goals. So one is to have your first introduction into legal citation. And as you know from week one, we cite everything we do in the law. We must cite everything we do. And we're looking for primary law. We're looking for binding primary authority. That's our goal. We also talked about secondary sources. You can shepherdize secondary sources as well. You can check their, you need to cite those secondary sources as well. And for this week, I'm going to introduce you to resources that we provide that we've drafted here, and then resources that are available to you free. You don't have to buy a book anymore. But you need to get familiar with these resources. Now, I direct you to Legal Citation by Peter Martin, a resource that's available and linked through Canvas. It's available wholly online. You can also download it in a PDF and other online versions, and you can find video tutorials that you're going to have to actually go and review. And that website and link is provided on Canvas. In addition to this resource, you should read and become familiar with the resources and the citation guidelines I also provided on Canvas. It's the rest of that document that leads you to Peter Martin's resource. You need to refer to these guidelines anytime you cite any of the primary and secondary sources of law that we'll work with in this class. You must cite your authority for everything in the law. And I've said that the second week in a row, right? So I shouldn't have to say it anymore. Know that you must do that, and you must cite it properly. I'll talk a little bit later about why, but it's not the same focus as why you had to cite things in research papers and other courses. And I'll explain that in a bit. And then you're going to watch those videos that I mentioned that are part of that Peter Martin site. Then we're going to put into practice an opportunity for you to find a case on Lexis and a statute. And you're going to come back and tell me what you found and explain all that. You're also going to do some internet research. I talked a bit about in week one about the concept of jurisdiction and how jurisdiction and venue are related to geographic location. So you're going to go look at the maps that I also discussed in week one that are available through the Illinois courts that break down different Illinois jurisdictions, and that's what we're going to focus on. And I have three things that you're going to have to do regarding those maps that's going to force you to kind of go and use those maps and then think about the concepts that I introduced last week. Now, as with anything you do in this or any other of our legal studies classes, spend some time organizing your responses for all parts of the assignment. Check your organization, your spelling, your grammar, your citations, and be sure that the information that you present is in your words and it accurately and completely responds to those assigned tasks. Posting date, Thursday at 10 p.m., that'll be consistent until we get to the final week of the class when we have a compressed time frame. And then go and do a self-assessment and see the self-assessment criteria on Canvas if you've forgotten that from last week. And do that by the following Monday at 10 p.m. Let me just say a couple things about the self-assessment real quick. The self-assessment is not necessarily for your grade. It's not really necessarily for me. In anything I do in the law, I basically perform a self-assessment. It's not the same exact format as what you're doing, but I do that, and we all do that. And you need to do a self-assessment on any work you do in a legal or justice field. Now, there's a couple other reasons that I have you use this particular format. Number one, the questions I ask you are going to help me to help you in the event that you do get off track. You will also see that by looking at what other people have done, there will be times in this class where I will give you a problem that there may be multiple ways to get to the answer. Some of those ways are more efficient than others, and that will also bear itself out through the self-assessment. So it's not just about, you know, tracking for the grade. It's about those types of things. The other primary reason that I have you do this self-assessment is that many of you are not comfortable with or haven't had a lot of experience with both giving and receiving constructive criticism. We live in a world of extra credit where everybody gets a ribbon and where, you know, we're not used to being held accountable to a great degree or holding our fellow or coworkers accountable. In this field, if I'm your boss, the supervising lawyer in the office, I need you to hold me accountable if my work's not up to par. Everybody holds each other accountable because we're performing a service for other people. We're serving other people through the law, and we're providing this service under strict ethical guidelines and rules that require we be competent and we do these things diligently, etc. We have obligations, and if we don't uphold those obligations, then somebody suffers a loss, and that may be us. So that's the major reason, I guess, of all, besides all the other reasons I've listed for the self-assessment, is to give you some experience. So I don't want you, you know, don't be critical, don't be mean, constructive criticism. That doesn't mean you say, great job doesn't help me much. And you'll find that we're not very touchy-feely in the law, and so it doesn't help you to say great job all the time. If I did a great job, hey, tell me I did a great job, but tell me why. Give me some substance, okay? Give me some constructive feedback. So that's why we do that, just as an aside. And we'll talk about that more as we go on, but use it in that vein. Don't use it as just another assignment. Use it as a self-help tool and an opportunity to kind of judge yourself where you're at. And that will change over the course of the semester. Some weeks you'll be up and some weeks you won't. So our focus this week, we're going to identify some practical guidelines for beginning research tasks, list the strategies for effective research, we'll develop an effective plan, or how you develop an effective plan for working with authorities. And then we'll establish some guidelines for when you end your research. When have you done all you can do? Because it's not always clear in legal research. Now, when we have a legal research project, there's really only two inflexible rules that you must follow when you perform legal research. And you have to do these things to ensure you comply with the ethical duties of competent representation. First one's pretty simple. You must read, R-E-A-D in caps, the full version of anything you intend to use as legal authority. That's cases, statutes, whatever it might be. You have to read the whole thing. And multiple times, I was having a conversation with a student who's in criminal law and new to reading cases. The student was struggling with the fact that sometimes you have to read a case 2-3 times. I've been doing this a long, 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 long time. And there are times when I have to read a case 2-3 times to really figure out what the heck is going on in the case. It's just the way it is. But you have to read the full version. The other thing you must do is you must verify that all primary authorities are still good. So that's Shepherd's and Keysight that we talked about last week. And then you have to review anything relevant that that verification process leads you to. Reading that new thing, repeating the process until you are at the end of the road, until you are unable to find no more relevant resources related to that area of the law applicable to your particular issue or situation. And if you do that, you're going to find the best answers towards solving your legal research problem. Now, I say the best, not the answer. If you'll recall, we had this discussion last week, the best answers are what we seek. There rarely are the answer until a court tells us it's the answer, until we get a judgment. And that's why we have courthouses and judges. If things were that clear and we didn't have legal disputes, we wouldn't need courts and judges. Wouldn't need lawyers or paralegals either. Now, when you're considering your legal issue or problem, there's five core issues that you should analyze. So the first thing I always try to figure out, is it criminal or civil law? And depending on if it's criminal or civil law and what type of action it is, it may also tell me if it's a state or a federal matter. That goes to the next question. Jurisdiction. Who has jurisdiction over this thing? So criminal or civil, what jurisdiction? What's the type of action? Is it that typically depends on the remedies, and that's one of the considerations, but what can be sought? Is it money? Is it fairness? Is it punishment? What is the action, the potential remedy? Or what would the cause of action lead to? You can also consider potential defenses or potential remedies. If you don't know what the cause of action is, you can start with what the potential remedy or what you think the remedy might be, and then work backwards from there to determine what the proper course of action might be. Now, how do we determine if our research is sufficiently thorough? That's one thing that some of you have already expressed some frustration or struggles with, because you want to be thorough, and that's great. I want you to be thorough. But taking in mind what I said a few minutes ago about the best answers and that rarely do we find the answer, that's part of your struggle in this regard. So how do I ensure that I've researched sufficiently enough? Well, I can use encyclopedias or treatises, ICL, or even Google to obtain some background information on the topic I'm trying to research to see what else is out there to sort of verify what I'm finding, to validate what I'm finding, to see what other people have said about what I'm finding. Am I heading down the right path? So I would always go to, and ICL's a wonderful one. You know that ICL is my go-to. Many of you know that. And if you don't know that, you know it now. It breaks down the law in Illinois on almost everything, and so it's a great resource to give me some background to help me know that I am heading down the right path and whether I not or not I've sufficiently researched whatever the issue might be. Another is when I'm looking for cases, I always consider looking to statutes if I'm not finding anything directly under cases. Statutes regulate nearly every potential thing in our lives, and it's possible, highly possible, there's a statute related to the issue you're researching, and if there is, then we look at the annotated versions of the statute. And when I say annotations, go to Lexis in your research this week when you get to the statute and page down once you find that statute, and you'll see a listing of cases, a listing of primary authorities, cases. And then you'll see some secondary, possibly secondary authorities as well. Those are called annotations. Those are, the publisher has linked or provided references to other cases that cite or refer to the case you're looking at or the statute you're looking at. So they provide cases. It gives us a lead. And you also notice that for the cases, they're divided by jurisdiction. So if I'm looking for a 4th District, Illinois appellate court case on that particular issue that's statutory in nature, I page down and it will break out for me some cases I can start with. I didn't say finish with, start with. And then you go pull the case, you read the case fully, if it applies, now you shepherdize, you go find what shepherds lead you to, you read those cases, if they apply, yada, 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 that process continues until there's nothing left to look at. If you can't locate any cases through annotated codes or treatises, you can look to other secondary sources like ICL. Find the topic of law you're looking at on ICL, and it a lot of times will give you references to cases. You can try bar journals, law reviews. You can try Google. And then finally, we shepherdize or key cite, we validate or verify our cases and statutes to ensure they are still good law. And we follow that process that I've described all the way through. So by what I just said on it, you know, how do we ensure we've done things thoroughly? That's a process, right? And it's a process that is way different than most things you've ever done. It is definitely not as easy as typing something into a search box and boom, you get a bunch of things right away. You have to use the most important computer at your disposal to analyze, assess, evaluate the resources that have come up on your screen, and then keep track of those resources and determine what is and what isn't good and follow this process all the way through. You know what the most important computer in your arsenal is? It's your brain. It's your brain, the most important muscle in your body. Work it and use it. Some questions that you might ask yourself to help you develop your search words or your query, the thing you plug in to the Lexis search box. You might ask yourself, who's involved? Not necessarily the names of the people, but what is their relationship? Are they married? Business partners? Okay, who's involved? What's the issue? Is it a domestic situation, a divorce, a contract dispute? What is the issue between the potential parties? Where did that activity or issue evolve or take place? When did it take place? If you know, why did the issue develop? What are the facts behind how the issue developed? And essentially, that's telling you how the issue arose. The facts of how the issue arose may also help you determine some of the words you might research. Now you're going to find you'll get better at developing your search words. As you have a better understanding of the laws, you ask yourself those questions, especially the questions that I started this discussion with, you know, criminal or civil jurisdiction, etc. You're going to get a lot more efficient there, but you'll see over the course of the next few weeks that a lot of times the words we think are the logical words are not the words that the legislature has used to describe or to define something in a statute. And so sometimes we're thrown off, but that's okay. We'll get there. Just know it. So when do you stop researching? That's the next question that most people ask. I don't know when I stop. Well, I've kind of described it. At the end of the day, you stop when you've done a thorough job, when you've gone through that whole process I described a few minutes ago. But you should be aware that in some cases, economics will govern the scope of your research. So you have to be efficient, but you must be complete. Now, there are times in my past where we had corporate or insurance clients that wanted to tell us how much we could spend on research. And they would only pay us to a certain extent. Well, the bottom line was I was going to then eat that loss, because if we didn't get the research completed within that dollar amount, we are still going to do the research. Because you know what? They come back and sue me if I didn't find the right answer or the best answer. So we have to be complete. One clue that your research is complete is you start bumping into the same authorities. You keep coming back on the same things. When you're a beginner researcher, often you lack the confidence to stop researching. You're convinced that there is one perfect case to find, and there rarely is such a case. So if you're going through that process of verifying through Shepherd's and you're bouncing into the same things, you're not finding anything new, you're probably at the end. As a general rule, you need fewer authorities to support a well-established principle of the law, and you're going to need more authorities to discuss some emerging area of the law, or one that is very fact-specific and constantly in conflict, something that's not as well-established. You'll see what I mean by things that are well-established, and those well-established things will have a ton of cases. Not that difficult to come up with a couple examples, from your jurisdiction, and things that are binding and clearly binding. The others, sometimes it's difficult, but that's part of the task. There's 5 tips for being successful in research that I'd have you keep in mind. Number one, you got to be prepared. You have to go through those questions in that process. You have to sit down and either have a document open on your computer that you're going to type these things out in and keep track of, or have a good old-fashioned legal pad and a pen. But keep track of what you're doing. Be prepared. Being prepared is going to lead you to the next one, which is be organized. And if you do that, what I just suggested, having a legal pad or having a document open, you're going to organize your research on that. Next one is be patient. I'm 6'5", 240 pounds, and you wouldn't think of me as being somebody who does yoga and practices meditation, but it's something I started to get into way before COVID. But then, man, and during that COVID time, it ramped up. It's something that I believe in, as I was a basketball coach for a long, long time and taught physical conditioning and weight training to, college athletes. I've always incorporated breathing. Look up box breathing as a way to control yourself or to calm yourself. In research, you have to be patient. You have to breathe. You have to take a deep breath. That most important computer, the most important muscle in your body that I described, it needs you to breathe. You have to be patient. And in legal research, that's the key to everything, being patient. So be patient. Now, having said that, you have to be thorough, and I covered what you need to do to be thorough and how that works. Be thorough, always. No shortcuts. The same time, the final one is you need to be creative or resourceful. You need to be creative or resourceful. And that goes back to the example I used. If you're finding no cases, you're seeing nothing, what statutes might apply? Because statutes, administrative regulations, rules, our lives are controlled or managed or impacted by some sort of statute or regulation. from the time you wake up till the time you go to bed and all the time you're sleeping. So that's an example of being resourceful or creative. I suggest you keep, you use, you revisit the resources that you purchase, your book, etc. But also these things that I provided in this course and the things that will lead you to in this course, like the things you find in ICKLE. Learning legal research is like riding a bike, and these items may be called upon in later classes or years into your career to help boost or promote your balance in legal research. I see it time and time again. Students come back and they say, hey, you know, I was doing this project, working on this case, and some high profile case that they're doing research on, and they drew on these things. So keep those things. They're provided for you. They're not something that you use for a class and discard, because this particular class you will draw on for your entire career. This is the Week 2 Legal Research Podcast. I appreciate your efforts in Week 1. I look forward to seeing your efforts in Week 2. If you need to get a hold of me, you know where to find me.